everyone, welcome to Spirit Matters, the place where we try to make spirit matter. So tonight we have a very special guest, it's Karambakarana Swami, and Maharaj is originally from Holland, and he's been practicing Bhakti Yoga for over 50 years now. And tonight Maharaj is going to share his realizations with us on freedom, a life of freedom. a life of freedom. So we hope you enjoy the program. And we have a wonderful feast afterwards in the restaurant. So please stay and have a lot of it. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. We had also many guests that came from other places and the floor upstairs has a weight limit. So, you know, what to do. I didn't want to sort of crash down in ecstasy. So that's why we just have the program here this time. The idea was an idea of Steve. Steve was here yesterday. Some of you may know Steve. Steve left yesterday for Europe. But before he left, he told me, he suggested I would speak on the Gita. He said Gita meditations, and then the fifth chapter of the Gita deals with a life in freedom. A life of freedom. As a lotus sits upon the water without becoming wet, so the soul, illuminated by wisdom, lives in this world in freedom and joy. The wise see all beings as equal, and the Lord as the friend of all. So in this way, the fifth chapter is bringing us this metaphor, the metaphor of the lotus that sits in the water and yet is not affected by the water. The water just runs off whatever water comes. So the lotus is blossoming in that condition. It is one might think a difficult condition. Others would not do well under these circumstances. So the water represents the struggle for existence that everyone is facing, and we are all facing somehow or other that struggle for existence. And then the lotus is the symbol of one who is not affected by that struggle for existence. It's not so easy. We see a lot of people under the weather, a lot of people have a story to tell about how tough it is or this or that. But here we see a lotus, a symbol of beauty, a symbol of the best, while the conditions are just as difficult as for everyone else. So therefore the lotus is representing a self-realized soul, is representing a person who is in this world and at the same time not in this world, who may be physically here, but who internally lives in another reality, in another dimension. So then the Gita brings up a question in the fifth chapter. And it says that it is a question that arises from confusion, because first in the Gita they recommended renunciation, right? Or to give up, to renounce the world, and as a means of not getting entangled. Well, makes sense. I mean, if you look at that, you know, like I say, like our Bob Marley, you know, the prophet, saying, you know, no woman, no cry. Of course, I'm not. But there was a logic. There's a lot. If life is very simple, then also no complications. He didn't mean anything bad towards women. He just meant to say that life then would become complicated. If you're alone, life's more simple. So in that way, we've always seen in spiritual traditions, we've seen people that would go into the forest. We have seen people that would go into the mountains. We've seen people that lived in a cave, and so on and so on. And there are many, many stories about such, and there are still many such yogis or personalities living in the Himalayas today. We can find many yogis living in forests, and I'm sure Africa has its own people who also were like that, who would sort of be more withdrawn, as the European and American traditions have, or Australia, anywhere in the world, really. One may find hermits or people who turn away from the world with a desire to simplify life and then open up to higher realities. So that's one option that is mentioned here. And the other option is to work actively in this world, but in a spirit of yoga. So what to do now? That is the question. Renounce the world or work in a spirit of yoga? Well, I guess the choice is not clear yet. What is it? What is working in a spirit of yoga? Working yoga actually means to connect. To connect, it is said to connect with the Supreme, to see everything connected with a spiritual origin, with a spiritual source. The Supreme Person in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna. So what's the best? To turn away from the world, or to stay in the world, but to work in an enlightened consciousness. So the fifth chapter says that when we work in an enlightened consciousness, that is better than to turn away, because then we are making a positive contribution. Whereas when we turn away, then we're basically not making a contribution. So therefore, it's better to turn away from the world than to become part of karma. Karma is the result of exploiting the world. Well, exploitation is there, right? Undoubtedly. We have nowadays the environment as a big topic, right? Climate change and so on. And everyone knows the result is not due to some natural cause, but it is due to mankind, right? Who has been not so kind. Man unkind, one might say, who has in a way exploited things and polluted the air, the oceans, and left no forests and this and that. So that is the spirit of karma. It is the spirit of selfishness, to work for one's own gain. Then one creates actually karma. Karma means that every action has a reaction. It means to work, and then when we work, there are reactions to that work. That is karma. So we are all facing reactions. We may think that the weather has a will of its own and is just sort of happening by high pressure and low pressure in the atmosphere. But that's not entirely the only reason. The deeper reason is it's our karma. When it rains in Cape Town, we had it coming because of previous actions. Yes, We ourselves are making destiny. Interesting. Interesting that the Vedic texts are telling us that we ourselves, whatever we do in this world, is shaping the future. Believe it or not, but okay, that's what the Vedic texts say. I mean, leave it open to anyone to do with it what they like. But the point remains that that's what it's about. Therefore, happiness, when it comes your way, also, it's not just dependent on your work. We can work so much, but it's just not working. It doesn't work out. And other times you almost do nothing and just success. You see someone, you know, they do nothing, right? Nothing, right? And everything works for them, you know, and you're working like anything. It's like, this is not fair. How is this possible? It's outrageous. Right? Karma. Karma is an explanation. The reactions to the previous actions have now brought us to a point where we are getting gain or loss. It's not new, because Western traditions also say that as you sow, so you will reap. Right? So that's reaction, that's karma. So, well, whatever. But work in yoga is different. Work in yoga, it is to connect. Yes, we are practicing. Many people are interested in yoga, but maybe we don't take it so far. Yes, you can sit with crossed legs and you can just straighten the spine and feel how the spine is in perfect balance with the force of gravity, so that there is no undue pressure, and in this way the spine relaxes. It's part of yoga. Yeah. But it doesn't stop there. There are so many different postures. If you go in Delhi on the airport, they have like a huge big statue of the Surya Namaskar. Yeah. You see like all different yoga, you see statues in different yoga postures, Surya Namaskar, a useful statue. I had a good look at it. So yoga is big throughout the world, and everywhere people are practicing yoga. But obviously, yoga goes beyond gymnastics. My mother used to do it, you know, and play the radio, and like there was some piano, plunk, 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 and then and touch your toes with the tip of your nose and plunk, 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 plunk. And bend forwards and bend backwards and stretch yours and like this. She would go through this every day as a kid, I remember. Thinking, God, why is she doing this? You know, couldn't get it. Now I think sometimes, well, then I begin to understand. But, okay, it's about fitness. Everyone wants to be fit. One doctor wrote an article in a magazine and said, why do you think people are jogging? Why do you think they are jogging? Finally he said, so that when they are naked that they still look good. Okay. That's a point that I thought the doctor... an intelligent man, yeah. Anyway, so physical fitness, so that we are fit to enjoy the world, fit to play. Ready. So yoga is very popular. Also, yoga, so that you're fit to work. Yoga, so that you are fit to study and graduate with a clear head and feel the prana flowing through your veins, right? You're feeling the energy as you're sitting in your exam, just yoga. Full of like higher energy. That's not exactly a very profound application of yoga. That stays a little bit on the exterior rather, right, on the bodily platform. One should know, first of all, what culture we're dealing with. Where's yoga coming from? Just as, you know, like if I'm in Africa, I may buy some natural medicine in the marketplace, but it's not enough. You need to like understand like how it works, that there's a way of life with it, and you know, it's not just. So in the same way, the Vedic culture is a culture which describes the self. It is said Atma. The word Atma is the self. And it says the self, the word Atma has three meanings, and it's not clear which one it is. One meaning is body, another meaning is mind, and another meaning is soul. So then we have the mind, body, soul experience, right? Three levels. Atma. So yoga obviously applies to all these three levels. It's not just applying on the physical platform about fitness. Yes, yes, it also applies to the mind. All right, some stress relief. So many times they've asked me, you know, in universities to give a lecture on Bhakti yoga and on the topic of stress relief, you know. Oh my God, I'm totally stressing out over such topics. I really like, do I really have to talk about stress relief or something else? First of all, I must admit, I'm not the type. I am kind of like, you know, they say in American terms, you have East Coast people and West Coast people, and on the East Coast it's New York City, and in New York it's like, you know, life on the go, you know, I mean, go, you know, go somewhere. And then the West Coast and the sun shines and sort of, you know, life is really slow. I guess in here in South Africa you have Johannesburg and Cape Town, something like that. Well, okay, so there are different moods in the world, and I guess I'm more the New Yorker. What can I do? It's like different folks, different strokes, right? So, what's wrong with stress? Little stress. If there's no stress, if you don't stress yourself a bit, life gets pretty boring. Right? You never stress yourself. You know, everything very peaceful, everything very calm, relaxed. Chew every bite of food 100 times, till it tastes like nothing. Because you just sometimes chew it 3-4 times and just swallow it. You know, just go for the next. So, yes, a little. But, so stress is not. But good or bad, it depends. Too much stress, too much of anything is not good. Yeah. So, another thing is like peace. You know, people want peace of mind. But yeah, okay, we want some peace, but we also want some excitement. And if it's only peace, you know, it's like, well, it's very peaceful here. Nothing ever happens. I think I'm going nuts in this place. I think I need some life. I gotta get out of here. So, yes, that's also there. Yeah. So we are looking for yoga. Yeah. Yoga, therefore, is not about just physical fitness or mental peace. Yoga means to connect with nature. Our body should be connected with nature. That makes sense, obviously. Then our mind also needs to connect. You can't have an unconnected mind. It doesn't exist. The mind is always connected to something. And that is the nature of the mind. The mind is like doing that, connecting to all kinds of things, right? Money.
Connected.
Like that. Many things in the world, daily. Our mind is connecting and disconnecting. That is the nature of the mind. Sanskrit says, sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting, connecting, disconnecting. So, the question is, what are we connecting with? If we connect with material things, name, fame, glory in this world, then that's I want to be famous, I want to be. Okay, but are you sure? Sometimes you read stories about celebrities and what they have to go through, you know, big sunglasses,
hiding, you know,
running, racing, you know, like that story of Diana, Princess Diana in England, who was followed by reporters and racing, you know, trying to stay ahead. Stories about George Harrison diving into a laundry chute, in a hotel, when the press kicked in the door. Yeah. Finally, the press kicked in the door, and they were coming in. A hole in the wall for the laundry, diving, you know, landing down there on a pile of laundry, running out the back door, you know. To be a celebrity, well, I don't know, is it really that much fun to be famous? It's like, well, I want to be the president of the United States. Of course, you have to, if you're an American citizen, the number one man in the world. Okay, but do you know that the head of state gets 1/6 of the karma of all the people in the country? 1/6 of all the karma of all the people in the country. Sure, you want to be the head of state? Well, really? Do I get the karma? What does that mean? It means everything they have done that's not okay, you get 1/6 for it. And if they do some right things, you also get 1/6 for it. You want to gamble if the citizens are going to do the right things or the wrong things? Yeah, so one is responsible. Yeah, karma. No one. There are laws that govern this world. Haven't we seen the law of gravity? So we may say the topic was a life of freedom. We may want to be free, but can we be? Yeah. No, I can only jump so high because I'm limited by laws of nature. I can only see so far. Right? I can only hear certain tones and so on. Limited by laws of nature. So, this law of karma is also there. Well, so, in this way, it's not so easy to be free. If externally, I don't know if we can make ourselves free externally. Like every day you have to eat. If we didn't have to eat, just think about it, if you didn't have to eat, then maybe you wouldn't have to work. Every morning people go to work, right? One thing is, you've got to eat, you know. You're hungry, you. Yeah? So the first problem is that we have to eat. And say, I like eating, yeah, me too, but not. But then, it's a high price, you have to work hard. We need a shelter, yeah? we need a house or something. You have to pay. So we're not free, you can't just do what you like. You're always like, you know, do I have these things we need? We have so many needs, so we are not free. That is the first point. Yeah. On the physical plane, we're not free. On the mental plane, we're also not free, because, you know, as some band used to sing, you can't always get what you want. Yeah. And that is true. You can't always get what you want. So in that way, we're also not free. If I was free, I would get everything I want. And if I'm not getting everything I want, or not at all, then I don't feel very free. So freedom on the level of the mind or the body is difficult to achieve. It said, but we can be free. We can be. We can be like a lotus in water. We can be. But first then, we have to understand the purpose of the whole universe, and then we have to understand the purpose or what our role is in the whole blueprint of the universe. So that basically is what the Gita is saying. The Gita is saying that the world has a divine purpose. It has a divine purpose. It has a purpose that all living beings uplift their consciousness, grow and become greater, and reach a divine state of consciousness. In that divine state of consciousness, they themselves are always situated in happiness, and all their actions are aiming to include the happiness of all others. So just think about that. That's something profound. Not only that we're concerned with our own happiness, everyone wants to be happy. My dog also wants to be happy. That's nothing special. But, you know, to include everyone else's happiness as well, then it becomes a complete picture. Then you're suddenly talking about an enlightened approach. That's what we're aiming for, an enlightened approach. And that is Bhagavad Gita. It said, because the Supreme Lord, who is the origin of this whole world, Krishna, who is the origin of this whole world, he's the well-wisher of the entire world. He's the well-wisher of the whole creation. That's his whole plan. So his plan is not that one goes to war against the other, or that people divide land with borders and get weapons and just build it up and dig in against each other. That wasn't his idea. That's our plan. It's our idea. In the divine plan, there are no borders. There's no division. In the divine plan, we're all one family. In the divine plan. In the divine plan, we are all related. In the divine plan, it's not an elbow for you, and me up front. In the divine plan, is okay. We go for it together. And in a divine plan. So that is yoga, to connect with that divine plan and to fit in the whole role that is meant for human beings, to act in this way, and rather than to use. It is said in the Gita, the strength of the strong is meant to protect the weak. Well, that's not the history of the world. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. That's not the history of the world. So that means we have to, the Gita is here to bring enlightenment in the world, to say, yes, the strength of the strong is meant to protect the weak. And that means all human beings are meant to protect animals or other creatures, and that means amongst human beings also. So this is all part of the divine blueprint, and within that we become an instrument, and when we become such an instrument, then we have a harmonious existence. So basically, the lotus, the symbol of the lotus in water, the lotus that is not affected, the water just runs off, is that existence where we will flourish and blossom when we are becoming the well-wisher of all others. Then we ourselves will not be affected. But of course, to be a well-wisher of others, okay, I'll try that. I'm going to, from now on, I'll give every beggar on the street, I'll give him something. That's nice, but what will he do with it? What will he do with it? Maybe something destructive to himself, by some intoxication. What good is that? So no, we have to also change the world into a world where everyone gets divine consciousness. We were out and we came back, and as we came back we saw some police cars on the highway, blue lights flashing on the side, stopped somewhere. First it looked like a speed trap or something, but then when we drove past we saw we saw a police car, we saw a civil car, another police car, and like we saw three men who were lying flat on the ground, holding each other's legs, and some cops next to it with a gun, probably a stolen car. It looked like that. Things like there's a lot of confusion in the world. There's a lot of people who don't know what to do with their life. They're living a life of entanglement, a life where they lock themselves in behind bars, right? Maybe, not necessarily the jail, but the bars of material existence, locked in. But if we act according to that divine plan, accepting that ultimately life is meant for a divine purpose, then everything becomes suddenly surcharged with positive energy. So that is yoga, and that is the key to a life of freedom. Well, that's basically the point of the fifth chapter of the Gita. There's a lot more, but I will not put it all in one talk. So that's actually what yoga is. So yoga is first of all a state of consciousness, and then we live a harmonious existence. But the world doesn't know. Even in universities, they don't know. Even in universities, we are learning how to destroy the world. I know that there are a whole bunch of chemical engineers in this room, and they are educated for years to systematically destroy the world. That's basically, and they get paid a fat salary for it as well. And you just wonder, sometimes you wonder like, is this the cream of society, right? After a lot of testing and a lot of, things, exams, etc., these are the ones that made it through, right, somehow or other. They made it through tough exams, had to sweat, etc., and then they come out on the other end, and then they are professional destroyers. You just, turn the world that we live in into hell. What to do, what to do. It's the world we live in. So we're not blaming the individuals, but something's wrong with the system, that's for sure. Something's wrong with the system. So we see that even in the educational system, the proper vision is not there. Not at all. So that's interesting. Interesting how just men is living in war with the environment. That's the modern world is in war with the environment. You know, you get a disease, throw a nuclear pill on top. Okay, killed a million bacteria, I feel better already. Some insects. We know the pesticides, planes, spray the fields, kill them by the millions. War. Plants, forget it. Concrete on top, just cement. Like that. Okay, maybe my examples are a little extreme. But maybe reality is also a little extreme, if you think of it. A little bit of divine consciousness. A world where everyone, a world based on friendship, why not? Why not be friends with people? See, the normal relationship between people that don't know each other should be friendship, actually, in the world. But it is because things have gone wrong somewhere, the normal relationship is one of fear, Like, I don't know this guy, I don't know what to think, check him out a little and slowly, I'm not sure if I'm going to let him in my closer circle, and fear. So yoga, in all its levels, can give us health, can actually give us a positive state of mind, and can connect the soul intimately to its real meaning in life, and therefore it can give us fulfillment. And then, at the end of life, we can achieve a spiritual goal. And then perfection is attained. So, I think the fifth chapter of the Gita is telling us something valuable with this lotus untouched in the water, the self-realized soul untouched in the mid of a mad, mad world. Okay, any of you would like to respond for a few moments with a question or a comment, that would be most welcome.
You earlier mentioned, and it's not a trick question, the divine plan.
Yeah.
What is the divine plan actually, and will it be revealed to us at some stage during our lifetime on Earth?
Mm-hmm. Everyone has some information of the divine plan from within the heart. Somehow or other, within our heart, there is an inner voice. Everyone has an inner voice. And if you're open to that inner voice, we have a conscience. We have a conscience that tells us, no, this is not right. So there is something within our heart that is revealed to us within. So one can, therefore, connect with the divine plan within, to an extent. To really make that connection, it requires purity, or the opposite of corruption. That is very difficult because the world is corrupted, and we grow up corrupted. We grow up doing something like for example, I stole the cigarettes of my father when I was 6 years old, and I went smoking in the forest. And did I get sick? I didn't know. I was only six, right? But yeah, stole them. Things like that. We are corrupted. We learn the wrong things, and then later, when we are adults, then we realize, oh, I've got a whole wrong set of values, and I have to make come up with my own. So everyone goes through that, you know, that from your parents you pick up all these values, and then you have to, at one point in maturity, decide for yourself, really, like what values you want to live with. And that's modern times. It shouldn't be like that. It should really be that parents teach you the right values and that you can rely on that. That would be... It means that the parents are already misguided, confused. I mean, all good intentions, but confused. I mean, they love you, but somehow or other, on some points, they got it wrong to do. With all due respect, you know, all our parents are like that. So, that means corruption is set in the system somewhere. That's entered into society, into family life. And, at one point, you even have to come to the point where you look into the mirror and say, maybe even me too. Maybe it even has touched me also. All right, it's not the end of the world, but it means that we are somewhat disconnected in that corrupted state of consciousness. We'll be somewhat disconnected from our inner voice and from the knowledge in our heart. Therefore, we turn to scripture. Therefore, scripture, different scriptures in the world, different sacred books, reveal some information, so that helps to get information about the divine plan. Therefore, today we are basing our discussion on the Gita. This is part of our Gita meditations, or we're contemplating on the Gita and what it actually means. The Gita gives us a divine plan, and it's logical. Like when I say something that we should base our happiness on the happiness of all, it makes sense. It's noble. That's a noble thing, If it's like, it's all about my happiness here, couldn't care less about you guys. No one would stay very long. But including the happiness of all is a noble thing. So that we should... So we can recognize the message in the Gita as a message that makes sense. It's not only like airy-fairy information. It's practical, it's logical. And, it's a very complex world, right? Some people think the world came about by chance, right? And Charles Darwin was thinking like that. But Charles Darwin had ideas that life was evolving from very primitive forms to very complex forms. And he thought first there were one-celled creatures and then these were very primitive forms, and then later on they evolved in complex forms. And Darwin thought that a cell was basically a nucleus surrounded by a whole lot of protoplasm, right? Some sort of jelly substance, not complex substance. Now we know that a cell is a very complex structure. Now we know that in a cell there are channels for distribution of all kinds of energies and things that are highly complex. And it's said that these distribution networks within the cell are more complex than a whole city. So it's not really true that life developed from very simple forms to more complex forms. Even the small forms are complex. So where is all this coming from, this whole world? This question has puzzled man throughout the centuries. So yes, scriptures like the Gita say it has a divine origin. I saw a mathematician, Stefan Unwin, who wrote a book he was a professional consultant for insurance companies, a big name in that world, and his business was risk calculation. So calculating chance. And his whole life, he just did nothing else but mathematical chance calculation. So he wrote a book, and where he did a chance calculation about the existence of God or not. And he came to 69%. You can check it out on the internet, Stefan Unwin, calculated at 69% for the existence. Well, it's a high percentage. Mathematical formulas are given, and they're all the standard formulas that are being applied. So, okay, there's something. A lot of scientists don't believe in evolution anymore. There was a manifesto signed by more than 400 scientists who rejected evolution. So, intelligent design is popular. A lot of people believe in intelligent design. It's one of those things, you type it in Google and intelligent design. There's a lot there. So yeah, it's going up and down. But ultimately, the Vedas say, phalena paricciyate, judge by the result. Like everyone has his own reality, and everyone his own, right? But what do you think? What is the reality of a man who lives by hijacking cars, right? And the reality of one who lives by the Gita? Yeah. If you live a life of hijacking cars, you live a life in total anxiety. And you live a life where every moment you think you can be caught, killed, you live on the edge of death, basically. At any moment, someone can get you, and you know it. And you're ready. Always. You sleep at night with your AK-47. Ready. Whereas when you are working as a well-wisher of all, with the divine, within a seeing that this is a whole divine arrangement, and you're worshipping and you're working as a well-wisher of all, then you become very peaceful and satisfied, and you feel like, I have some protection. I'm okay. Whatever will happen, even if my body will die, my soul is protected. So then you have a happier state of consciousness. So, judged by the result, everyone can believe what he wants to believe, but judged by the result. If I say that this body is only, but if I am only chemicals, I'm a bunch of chemicals. That's pretty depressing. I'm chemicals, that's all I am. Then if somebody has a bottle with some chemicals to help me overcome the fact that I'm only chemicals, I wouldn't mind, then I would have a drink right now, if you don't mind. If I'm only chemicals, can I have a drink, please? A strong one, if possible. I'd have it right now. But now that I sort of think that I'm more than just this body. I think I'm an eternal soul. I'm not worried. I feel pretty good. I feel quite relaxed. So every outlook in life has a particular result for the person. So one who lives by the vision of the Gita is actually experiencing a better standard of life, more happiness. So that we consider is a confirmation. It's a confirmation. as a confirmation that it works, then I'll buy into it if it works.
Mm-hmm. You were speaking about how the natural relationship between people that don't know one another should be friendship, but because something went wrong, it's not. And I find, you know, due to conditioning or whatever, you know, we may want to feel like we want to treat everyone as friends, but we don't.
We don't.
I know, I certainly don't.
No.
Always. So I'm just wondering if there's any kind of practical guidance or steps or advice you can give on how we can go about kind of creating a consciousness and an attitude
okay.
to everyone.
Because that's a very high level, right? And maybe you've just... maybe it's a level that I don't have either, right? So the discussion becomes a little theoretical. But we look at great spiritual personalities, right? I mean, in the history of mankind, we see such kind of great saintly personalities who really seem to have that, who really seem to be the well-wisher of everyone, isn't it? Yeah, so... That is what we have to do. We have to rise above selfishness, to be that, to really like. So then we need a process of purification. We have to become free from lust, greed, anger, envy. Madness and even illusion. So that's like then we have to go through a process of growth and developing greater qualities. Then we can do it. It's not like that you can just say, and from now this was a great idea and from now on I'm going to implement it. No. And what is in between is we need to grow to that, to a level, rise above the, when I spoke about corruption. You know, like, when you're angry, when you get really, really angry, I don't know if you have these problems, if you get, like, extremely angry, but when you're really angry, you start to destroy things, right, that are actually valuable, right, and then later you think, like, you know, why did I do this, you know, you can, like, you're... A graphics main computer. I mean, a computer can bring you to the point where you pick up the computer and just like say, you know, and then you think, oh my God, what did I just do? Or I've seen people in anger hit the wall with their fists, and then we had to take them to the hospital. So, like, what you do that for? Oh, I was angry. I mean, so maybe it's. At that point, it's maybe time to learn something about anger management, or even rise above anger, or envy. Where one person hates the other person, they just don't tolerate, someone else is like possibly in competition with me. This is all corruption. You have to rise above that. And the more we become free from this corruption, then there's a process. And for the process is a process of meditation, that's recommended, but the best one is the mantra meditation. So that we are evolving. And we're chanting the mantra for that purpose. Then we are becoming purified. And then we can reconnect and live in yoga. And that's fun. So there's a little process in between where we are now and where we want to be. That's normal. That's with everything. Anyone else? Otherwise,
It's kind of off topic.
topic, but I was just wondering, I always kind of have an approach to patients that I see with medical problems and stuff, but I always get bewildered by the patients that are affected with mental illness, and I don't really know how to approach them in a Krishna conscious manner. I just want to know your opinion.
Yeah, it's not easy, of course, you know, mental illness. But people with mental illness, they may not fully have control over the mind, so that a talk like this might, they may not have the peace of mind to absorb a whole talk like this, but something they can take. They can also chant the mantra. And that can also uplift them. We have many. I mean, they were in Amsterdam, we have a lot of people who sort of lost it somewhere on the way. And we had a man who was coming to our temple, and he was the moon. He said, "Let's explain. I am the moon personified." I said, "Well, nice to meet you, Mr. Moon. You're welcome." And he's just the moon, right? Completely the moon, right? So literally a lunatic. But then the Bhagavad Gita explains, you know, that you're not the body, right? So we explained the Bhagavad Gita, and he came back again and again, and eventually he got it. I mean, he was still the moon, but he knew that actually within his that was only temporary, then actually it was an eternal soul. So, he did well. So really I'm an eternal soul. Of course, I'm the moon, but I'm eternal soul. Nice. So he knew that one day he wouldn't be the moon anymore, and then he would still be an eternal soul. So it made some advancement, isn't it? So even the craziest can take it. Then I'll sing a little more.
I thought of something to say in response to Guy. He's not here now, but I'll just say it anyway. I heard what one brahmachari does when he tries to struggle with lust, or when he tries to just process lust. He'll think of any woman as an expansion of Radharani. And obviously, who would want to try and enjoy Radharani if she's just there with Krishna? So I was just thinking, he asked, how can we treat everyone as friends? Maybe we shouldn't think of our own Krishna consciousness, and other people should just go their own way while we're trying to grow spiritually. Maybe we should try and see everyone on the same path, trying to grow.
It says something like that in the Gita, Pandita Samadarshina. One should see all equal, right? We should all see all living beings as souls, and we should, no matter what body they have, so the same as we are, really. We have a tendency to see others as different, you know, and to make these differences, and we only stick to our own kind, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, only people with glasses, you know, are okay, and people who don't have glasses are strange, you know, sorry, and the other way around, you know. Yeah, we can get into that mood, but actually, yeah, people with glasses once used to be also people without glasses. Yeah. So we get so caught up in the externals, and we make all this separation between people, and as a result, this one doesn't talk to that one, this one doesn't trust that one. But the root of all that is fear. We think that, he's like me, so maybe he's okay, you know, and so we can be together, but then the others, they look different, so we're not sure if they're okay. Fear, so much. So the division in the world is based on fear, and now, of course, there are reasons to fear, because there's violence. It's a lot of violence. So it takes some if the Gita would enter into the educational system, then our engineers would maybe go to the point and say, like, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing? And maybe, you know, many people would start asking, what am I doing? So that's why you want to put the Gita out there. It's deep reflections.